Manufacturing Lives.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Welcome to the Morning Open, when we check in on business and the economy just as Wall Street begins the trading day. In a moment, America's factories say, hey, we're moving stuff out the door, and reports of a possible third government bailout for a major lender. But first, we ask, where's Wall Street? Stocks opened with a big drop this morning, but they've come back up a bit. The S&P 500 is down 0.1%. The NASDAQ down 0.4%. But the Dow has eked out a 7-point gain. It's at 9,889. Across the waters, more selling this morning. European markets off 1.5%, and Asian stocks were down a bit more than that. And yet, as I said, we got some good news from factories this morning. Here to explore that is Richard DeKayser, president of Woodley Park Research, joining us live from Washington. Good morning, Richard.
Morning, Bill.
Orders for durable goods, this is business equipment, appliances, airplanes, those were up last month. How bright a rainbow is that?
Well, it's an improvement. You know, after 2007, we basically saw a free fall in spending on these kind of items. Businesses were terrified of taking on long-term commitments, and in the past couple of months, we've seen what appears to be a solid floor with a modest rebound. So it's not a boom, but it's an end of the bust, and in that perspective, things are looking up.
Okay, Richard, I'd like you to hang on there just a moment. I want to bring in reporter Ashley Milne-Tite for this story's this morning's other big story. GMAC is talking to the Treasury about a possible third round of government bailout money. Ashley, good morning.
Good morning.
But what's the news?
Well, GMAC is the only recipient of bailout money to go for a third round of funding. And a bit of background, I mean, in their glory days, GMAC was the financing arm of GM. But more recently, they got really caught up in the subprime mortgage mess and they lost a lot of money. As a result, they applied to become a bank so they could receive government bailout funds, and they got it. But earlier this year, they had to do a stress test along with all the other recipients of bailout money, and they didn't do well. The government told them they needed to raise more capital. It helped out with some money, but GMAC still has to come up with another $5.6 billion by early November. Now, I talked to Christopher Whalen of Institutional Risk Analytics a bit earlier, and he thinks this move is a mistake on the government's part.
The real end game here is political. The Democrats know that they have to keep GM and the United Auto Workers on life support at least through next year's election, or they will start to lose House and Senate seats in the Midwest.
So he says pumping more money in is definitely not the answer, and that if anything, the company should be restructured if it's ever going to become a successful lender again.
Okay. Marketplace's Ashley Milne-Tite. Thanks.
You're welcome.
And back to you, Richard DeKayser. Okay, you heard one man's opinion. A bailout would be a political move. We just have a few seconds here, Richard, but I wanted to get your reaction.
I disagree. I think that's a cynical interpretation. To say that the Treasury is trying to buoy the economy solely for political gain ignores the reality that we've been in bailout mode for some time, and the real end game is trying to get the economy back on its feet. I think that's what the support for GMAC would be driven by.
Okay, Richard DeKayser, president of Woodley Park Research. Thanks so much. This is Marketplace Morning Report for Wednesday, October 28th at marketplace.org. Today, the Senate Judiciary Committee shines a light on the issue of health care fraud. Fraud is one of the biggest money wasters in our medical system, but it's been a relatively small part of the debate, as Marketplace's Joel Rose reports.
Healthcare fraud accounts for as much as $175 billion a year, according to a study released this week by Thomson Reuters. That's a lot of potential savings if you can find the fraud. Louis Sococcio at the National Healthcare Anti-Fraud Association says that's not always easy to do.
You have about 4 billion claims being filed every year. Plus, you have the entire range of healthcare problems, all the diseases, all the injuries, et cetera. So it becomes a very, very enormous and complex system to really go in and detect the fraud that's there.
Sococcio says the Justice Department has made some progress lately by focusing on cities with high rates of medical fraud, including Miami and Los Angeles. The healthcare overhaul bills in Congress would give law enforcement some new funds to analyze and fight the problem. But those bills would also expand access to health insurance and care. And Sococcio points out that would mean more fraud, not less. I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
Negotiations leading up to December's climate change summit in Copenhagen, Denmark, are not going smoothly. Yesterday, the director of the UN team coordinating the talks admitted Copenhagen is unlikely to produce a global treaty. So, what is Plan B? Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports from Washington.
One big speed bump on the road to Copenhagen is Congress has yet to limit carbon emissions. Stuart Eisenstadt was U.S. negotiator at the last UN climate conference in Kyoto, Japan in 1997. He says the Copenhagen meeting can still achieve what he calls a framework agreement,
in which the basic elements of a treaty are developed at Copenhagen, and the details are then filled out, particularly after the United States Congress hands President Obama a cap-and-trade bill that he can sign.
Eisenstadt says any future global agreement has to be more flexible, since U.S. caps on emissions won't be anywhere near Europe's. Paul Bledsoe at the National Commission on Energy Policy agrees a framework agreement will keep the momentum going.
If it involves China and India and the U.S. and other non-Kyoto signatories, it would be a very important step forward.
Bledsoe expects a new worldwide binding treaty can still be achieved next year. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
European regulators have just approved a plan for the U.K. to split its nationalized lender, Northern Rock, into two. Other big banks could also be cut down to size. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
Europe's competition commissioner has given her blessing. The British government, which saved Northern Rock from collapse and then nationalised it last year, will be allowed to divide it into a good bank and a bad one. The good bank, containing depositors' cash and sound mortgages, will be sold off. The bad bank, with most of the dodgy loans, will be kept for the time being. As a result of the bailouts, the British government still owns a vast chunk of the banking system, and it wants out, says Chris Hughes of financial website Breaking Views.
A partial sale, you know, of the good bit of Northern Rock is better than nothing if you're a government that's basically trying to get these banks back to the private sector.
He says that in the process of selling off its banking assets, the government wants to increase competition. It's reportedly pressuring the two other banks in which it holds large stakes to shed some of their subsidiaries. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
It is World Series time. The Phillies take on the Yankees in the Bronx tonight. And as Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports, this particular matchup may have just a little something to do with free market capitalism.
The Yankees pay more in player salaries than any other team in Major League Baseball, $208 million this year alone. Philadelphia comes in eighth at $111 million. Why do they pay so much? Because they make it all back and then some in TV rights in two of the biggest media markets in the country.
More times than not, the small market fans are going to have to realize that small market means small chances to be cheering for your team come October.
Paul Swangard is managing director of the Warsaw Sports Marketing Center at the University of Oregon. He says the system may not be fair, but baseball's a regional game, and the regions with the most people are worth the most to advertisers.
If you have more money at your disposal, oftentimes you're going to consistently have a competitive team each and every year.
There will be one money-saving aspect to this year's series. Fans will be able to buy a bus ticket between the two host cities for under $15 for the first time in a decade. In New York, and just under 100 miles from Philadelphia, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Credit card issuers have been rushing to raise interest rates and fees before new congressional restrictions kick in. So this week, the chair of the Senate Banking Committee proposed an immediate freeze on those card issuer practices. Los Angeles Times business columnist David Lazarus is following this. Hi, David.
Morning.
How are these credit companies trying to raise extra money?
Well, they're trying to raise money essentially by sticking their hand in your pocket, not to put too fine a point on it. Citibank, for example, has been sending out letters in recent days informing many cardholders that their interest rate is going up to almost 30%. In the letters that they're sending out, Citi really isn't giving any reason for that except to say that this will allow us to keep offering credit to people. And that raises real questions of fairness. Is it a money grab, or is Citi, in fact, managing higher risk?
But David, Congress is limiting the interest rates that they can raise. The card companies have to make money somehow, true?
Well, they do indeed. And a fair return, no one's going to begrudge them that. Here's the reality. Everybody pretty much needs a credit card in this day and age. The card companies, when they introduce very high rates or changes in contract terms that are not beneficial to the customer, the card companies have been offering opt-outs with that, essentially saying take it or leave it. If you don't like these changes, you can pay off your balance and walk away, no harm, no foul. The problem is when all of the major card issuers are doing this, you don't really have a lot of opportunities or alternatives to go elsewhere, so you're really getting a squeeze from the industry.
The chairman of the Fed, Ben Bernanke, says we've got to give the credit card companies time to make this transition to the new rules.
Yeah, cry me a river is what I say. I mean, when the Fed chief steps up and says we need to put the bank's interests first, I'm thinking, you know, the banks have had a pretty good and long run to get their act together. And to say that they're going to need a few extra months to accommodate these reforms, I'm kind of thinking, no, the banks need to earn our trust.
Okay, so David, what is a consumer to do about these new fees?
A consumer needs to watch very closely all the inserts coming in the mail with your statement. There's going to be a lot of changes coming down the pike. Moreover, if you see any sort of contract change or interest rate hike that you don't like, there are opt-outs. It may be difficult to find another card that meets your needs, but they'll probably be out there somewhere. It's worth looking around. Don't accept terms that you don't want.
But the letters are long and the print is small.
Very small. It's hard to read.
Los Angeles Times business columnist David Lazarus, thank you.
Thank you.
And finally, Canton, Ohio has been wiped off the map, at least the Google map. For days, people using Google to find Canton have been getting maps for Colesville, Ohio, which is a lovely town, except for the fact that it doesn't exist. Google says fixing the problem is complicated, but they are making progress. I typed in Canton a few minutes ago and got directed to Massillon, Ohio, which is wrong, but at least there is such a place. This is Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.